Right, it is the 15th of March, 2017. It is the 17th of Adar, Tavshanai in Zion, and we are in towards the end of Perek Chaf Dalet, or our last day of learning Perek Chaf Dalet, and we'd like to just focus on perhaps the most famous part of Perek Chaf Dalet, and that is the statement of Nasa V'Nishma. Now, if you look carefully at these psukim, it actually happens twice. Right, that there's in Pasuk Gimel it says Vayan Kol Am Kol Achad Vayamru Kol Hadvrim Asher Dibir Hashem Naase, that everybody said together all the things that Hashem said we will do, and then a couple of psukim happen, and then you get the Pasuk Zayin that says Vaykach Sefer Abis Vaykra Bezne Am Vayamru, and they said Kol Asher Dibir Hashem Naase V'Nishma, they said all that Hashem said Naase we will do and we will hear. So those are, so why does it change? Why is there a change from Nasa to Nasa V'Nishma? What is the meaning of Nasa V'Nishma? So before we get to the change, let's just talk a little bit about...
I said it a few parshas ago, too. Isn't this the third time already?
There is something in the Yisro that's true. Kol Asher Dibir Hashem Naaseh. Now it's true in Perek Yutes Pasuk Ches, it does say everything that Hashem said we will do. However, it seems like that is could be described as being particular, depending on which of the Rishonim you hold, like the Rashi or the Ramban, that could be particular to those halachos. Could be particular to the halachos of setting up the wall or not going on Har Sinai. Things like that. It's not necessarily talking about we're going to accept the entire Torah. But yes, it's true. It is there a third time. And the truth is that that doesn't change anything that we're going to say today. Okay, so one comment I also want to point out that the Rav Henoch Leibowitz makes the following observation. That in Gemara and Shabbos Perek, Daf Peches Sif Aleph, so there is Peches Amid Aleph, excuse me. So it has the following story. Ahu mina dechazye l'rava dekama ayin b'shmaisa. There was a min, a tztuki, who saw Rava that was learning Gemara. V'yasva etzbasa v'yadei tusei kara. So Rava was sitting, and his fingers he put the fingers of his hand under his leg. He was just the way he was sitting. V'kam miyayitz behu. And he was crushing the fingers to the point that it started, and he didn't realize it. And his fingers had blood coming out of them, and because he had such intense concentration, so he didn't realize that it was happening. So Amar Lei, so Suki said to him, Amma Piziza de Kadmisu Pumaihu Luunaihu. Repulsive people who put their mouths before their ears. This is the same kind of attitude that led to, that led to you saying Nasa V'Nishma. Akati b'pacha zusaychu kaimisu. You still persevere in your impulsiveness, is the way it's translated here. Right? Bereisha ibayluchu l'mishma. First you should have heard what Hashem had to say. You should have heard what the commandments or what the mitzvos were. Imitsisu kablisu. If you're able to accept them v'imlo. And if not, lo kablisu. You shouldn't accept them. So this is the same type of attitude. You who are sitting there learning, you're just so thrown yourself into it without necessarily realizing what you're getting yourself into. And you should have been, when you said Nasa V'Nishma, you shouldn't have said Nasa V'Nishma, we'll do whatever it is and, you know, let us know what we're supposed to do. It should have been, well, tell us what it is and we'll decide whether we're going to accept it or not. So Amar Lei, so Rava responds to him saying, Anan, he says, we, that the Sagayan Bishlemusa, we go in complete faith. We have complete emunah. So Ksiv Ban, it says, and he quotes a pasuk here in Mishlei, Tumas Yisharim Tinchem, the perfect faith of the upright will lead them. Hanach Inchi the Sagan Ba'alilusa, those people who go in the way of perverseness, meaning you, it says the second half of the pasuk, Veselef Bogdim Yishadim, then the perverses of the faithless will destroy them. So about us, it says, those with perfect faith, we will be led. And you that have not perfect faith, you're that are perverse and faithless, so you're going to be destroyed as a result. So that is that's the way the Gemara in Shabbos lays itself out. So Rav Henoch Leibowitz asks, he says, okay, but why was that guy wrong? I mean, it was a good question. What the way he understands it is, right, that because we have emuna, Hashem had just taken us out of Egypt, he'd just done so many miracles for us, we had emuna that everything that Hashem was doing for us is going to be good. So therefore we assume that everything was going to be good. So therefore we say Nasa v'nishma. Why would we not say Nasa v'nishma? Hashem is telling us, you want the Torah now? After me bringing food down you from the heavens and bringing water out of a rock and having you cross the Yamsuf and having 10 plagues brought on the Egyptians, are you ready to accept the Torah? Sure, we're ready to accept the Torah. Because we had such a high level of emuna, therefore we were ready to accept the Torah. So that's a pretty obvious answer. I don't think anybody here has a problem with that. So why did this Stuki, why did he have a problem with it? Why was he so questioning of Rava? Why was he so questioning of the Jewish people? So suggests Rav Hanoch that it is a result. Your attitude about emuna will then be reflective on other people's attitudes of emuna. That because from his perspective, he is one of little faith, so therefore he perceives that everybody else has little faith as well. So his challenge to the Jewish people was, what were you guys thinking? How could you have so much faith? Rava's response is, Rava, who is the Baal Emunah, the one who has Emunah, the one who has faith, to him, it's a Davar Pashat. To him, it's obvious. What do you mean? Of course they would have Emunah. Doesn't everybody have Emunah? That from a person's own perspective, they then often will extrapolate that and impose it upon other people, what they're thinking as well. And that was their machlokas. It wasn't necessarily a dispute. It was rather each coming from their own perspective and imposing their visions on other people. Yes, Sam, you're right there. Okay, so he comes and brings another similar Gemara. Actually, it's a Gemara that we dealt with in the last parak, because we dealt with it in Parshas Toldos, and that is Yaakov's being told to go to Yitzchak, and Yaakov questioning, isn't he somebody who... But I'm going to lie. That how could it be that I'm going to lie, and maybe my father is going to figure out who I am, and now I'm going to, and then I'm going to have some explaining to do. So we discussed last week that why is that pasuk is actually quoted to talk about Yaakov's truthfulness. So how does the pasuk where Yaakov asks about lying talk about his truthfulness? We discussed last week that had to do with the word ulai, that perhaps he'll find me. Ulai is like maybe, I hope, as opposed to pen, lest it happen. So Yaakov was like, I hope the truth comes out. He was clearly demonstrating that he was not really, this is not something that he wanted to do. But there's still a question about that the Chidushi Alev asks. He says, okay, but still, why was he so concerned? Why was he so concerned if... what's the worst that could happen? The worst that could happen is Yitzhak figures out that it's Yaakov, and Yaakov says, yeah, well, it is me because, A, Mom put it up to it, because Mom realizes that there's a big difference between me and Esav, and if you give the bracha to Esav, that's going to be catastrophic for the future of the Jewish people. You might think that both Yaakov and me and my brother are both supposed to be the leaders of the next generation of Jews, but it's not true. It's really just me, and Esav is going to form his own religion from which is going to emanate a Malek. And therefore, you need to give the bracha to me. That sounds like a pretty reasonable argument that Yitzchak would have been able to understand. He always said, oh, okay, so I'll give you the bracha. So suggests, Rav Leibowitz says, yes, except that Yaakov was concerned, because Yaakov was such a man of truth, that the mere fact that Yaakov was attempting to get this bracha through trickery would be enough for his father to say, yeah, but that would mean that you're not the one who I should be giving the bracha to. Right? So Yaakov's concern, the fact that Yaakov had that concern is exactly what demonstrates his truthfulness. Plus, really, there should have been another way for him to get it. He should have been able to just explain to himself to Yitzchak. But the fact that he thought that he would have been disqualified by the mere fact that he was doing something that was misleading and untrue should have been enough to demonstrate how concerned Yaakov himself was with truthfulness. Right, so this is idea number one. There's the famous Karlbach story of the Schwarze Wolf. Are you familiar with the Schwarze Wolf story? Oh, come on. The guy who needed to have children, him and his wife had not had children, and he was told to go to the following person, get a bracha from this person. He said, that person, but he's the ugliest man. He's the man who has no midos, is the man who is not kind, and why should you go to him? But somehow he knew that he had to go to him. Actually, that's like, I guess that's the beginning part of the story, which I'm not sure. I guess he had a dream that he had to go to him, or Eliyahu Navi told him he needed to go to him. So he goes to him, and he comes to him. He figures that, oh, if I show up to his house right before Shabbos, he won't have time to deal with me at all. Maybe he's in a good mood right after Shabbos, so maybe that's my best shot. So he shows up right before Shabbos, and he's told, and the door opens, and he sees the house is a disgrace, and it's disgusting, and one child is uglier than the next, And the father tells him, really, you came here for bracha for children? Go. He said, but I have no place to go. It's right before Shabbos. He said, well, spend Shabbos in the barn. And he spends Shabbos in the barn. He had brought with himself a little bit of food just in case he wouldn't be accepted in. And he sits on all Shabbos crying and what could it be. And then as he gets towards Shal Shudas time, So the barn opens up, and it's the father, the person who he was supposed to see, the Schwarze Wolf, but he doesn't look like the Schwarze Wolf. Now he looks, he's angelic, he has a long beard, and he's glowing from the Kedusha of Shabbos, and it turns out that he was one of the Lamed Vav Tzadikim. And he invited him, and he said, at this point now I can give you the bracha for your children. And I think that part of the story is that when you're going to be blessed with a boy within a year, and you should name him Wolf, and everybody should remember, the story gets told on forever and ever, right? So what's the idea? What's the idea he was trying to teach? Is that sometimes we see people, and we think that they have bad midos, we think that they're disgraceful, we think that they have problems, but really they're just reflecting ourselves. That was the sanctity of the Schwarze Wolf. He was really just reflecting what other people's attitudes. So until he worked himself up to a point of purity, he wasn't able to see the purity of the Schwarze Wolf. So when you're walking the streets, and you see a street cleaner on the street, and he looks so ugly, and he looks so dirty, you never know. You never know. So go... I'm sure you can find that. Find it online. You could go homework. You could go list catch it on YouTube later. The Schwarze Wolf, the holy of the holies, the deepest of the deep. All right, you can find it yourself. Ayin Sham v'Tim Sanachas. Okay, so I wanted to get to the this idea of the two Nasas, the Nasa versus the Nasa v'Nishma. So Rav Salvechik in The Rav Thinking Aloud, which is one of Bruce's favorite books, so he raises this question, and he points out that besides the idea that there's Nasa and Nasa Vinishma, right, according to Rashi, as we learned, so this whole parsha takes place before Matan Torah, right, that the Torah is out of order, and this place is before there, and he said, okay, we're not going to discuss Rashi, we're going to discuss the Shita of the Ramban, right, because remember, the Ramban said in the beginning of this parak that the Torah is completely in order. Well, Yisro part leave aside, but the part about there is an acceptance of the Torah before Har Sinai, and then Moshe comes down, there's the Aseret HaDibros are announced, Moshe comes down, teaches them Mishpatim, and following Mishpatim, come to get to this parsha, where the B'nai Yisrael says Nasev and Ishma. Nasev and Ishma happens, and then Moshe goes up in order to get the rest of the Torah. So now, what is this change that takes place from Nasa to Nasev and Ishma? So the Rav understands that there's two dinim, Svei dinim. There's two halachos in what it means to accept the Torah. There is a din of Shibud, and then there is a din of Avdus. There is a din of shibud, that a person has a responsibility, and then there is a din of avdus, an eved, that a person is totally connected to that individual, and you have to grow. That on one hand, we have an idea that I owe Hashem a lot, I am responsible to do mitzvos. In fact, I never noticed this before, but there is a halacha, I'm not sure it's come up here, there is a halacha that theoretically, although we don't do this today, except for in very rare circumstances, Beis Din can force people to do mitzvos. Makin va'unshin, that Beis Din has the right to, if a person refuses to do certain mitzvahs, so Beis Din can go beat the person up until they go and agree to do mitzvah. So a guy decides that he doesn't want to wear tefillin, so Beis Din can go beat him up until he agrees to wear tefillin. Beis Din, a person refuses to give tzedakah, so tzedakah in fact is an interesting question, but Beis Din can shake a guy down in order to force him to give tzedakah. That's why that is another parsha. But in the Shulchan Aruch, he quotes here from Simon Yoredeya, Resh Mem Hey, Sifdalet. Reish Mei Sifdalet is Hilchos Tam Torah, or Hilchos Kavod Rabba, I forget now. But there the halacha is, it's stated to a halacha, that a parent is responsible to hire a teacher for his children. That's the halacha. And then Shulchan Aruch continues on and says, and if he doesn't, so Beis Din can force him to do so. Beis Din can force him to take his money and pay. So the Vilna Gaon makes a comment there on that case. Why? Mishum de Mishabin Mamunhu. Because his mamon is mishabed to mitzvos. That his, whatever he is given, is actually owed to make sure that his mitzvos get done. So that's how that can function. And really, that's how all these things can function. We could beat a person up in order to do mitzvos, not because they're lacking something positive, but because they actually owe it. They owe the Kadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, those mitzvos which he is responsible to be doing. Beyond that, generally, when a person owes something, how do we get it? How does something come to be that I would owe you money, or I would lend money? How would such an occurrence happen? You would lend me money, or you would sell me something, and I would owe you something on credit, right? I would have to make a form of a kinyan. I would have to make an acquisition, and through that acquisition, I would then now be mishabed you that money. I would now owe you that money. So he points out that is true, that I have to make a kinyan, I have to make a formal acquisition when it comes between man and man. But what is a din in terms of a person? How does a person become indebted to a Kadosh Baruch Hu? How does a person become indebted that if, let's say, a person promises to give money to, well, the shul, but Rakan promises to give money to the Beis HaMikdash. So his statement, what? Well, right, his statement is enough to be mishabed him. So that's the halacha when it comes to kachim. Amira sola gavoa, kemira sola hed yodami. That speaking to a gavoa, speaking a statement towards Hashem, is like mesira, is like giving something over to a human being. Right? I don't have to do an official kinyan with Hashem. All I have to do is say it, and that thing now becomes hektish. Now that object becomes sanctified, and it's owed, so to speak, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that ability, that idea is done simply by B'nai Yisrael saying Nasa. Nasa happens in Pasuk Gimel, and as Bruce mentioned, it happens before Maimon Har Sinai as well, in the Pesukim in Parshas Yisro as well. So what was created then? What was created then is a responsibility to do mitzvos, a shiba to do mitzvos. But then the Rav continues on and points out the following idea. That according to Rashi, when did the conversion happen? We learned this already. When did the Jews convert to become Jews? When did they turn from being Israelites to being Jews? So they turned over, according to Rashi, before Matan Torah happened, because he claims this whole parak happens before the Aseret HaDibros was given. But according to the Ramban, it happens now. And as we pointed out, his giving of the mitzvos, the Aseret HaDibros plus Parshas Mishpatim, is a sampling of mitzvos to which B'nai Yisrael says, I accept those, and I'm going to accept whatever else you give us as well. So when is the conversion actually taking place according to the Ramban? According to the Ramban, it takes place now. It takes place actually after Maimon Har Sinai, in which case that means that Maimon Har Sinai, the actual giving of the Aseret HaDibros, was given to, technically, non-Jews. Right? And then they agreed that, oh, that's enough, let's continue on and gain even more. So the Rav then goes on and explains that why does the Geirus have to take place in those various stages? So he says, well, the first stage was them accepting that there are mitzvos, that I have responsibilities to Hashem. They already had responsibilities to Hashem. They accepted those at Mara. They accepted those in previous Prakim, Parshas B'Shalach. And now we're saying, oh, those that you told us, now we're going to accept all the rest of them that are taking place as well. And they henceforth conclude their Geirus. And that responsibility is not just simply all the mitzvos I have to do, but is a complete binding of a person towards the will of Hashem. That they recognize that it's not just things that I do, but I'm giving over my entire entity, my entire self, is now belongs to Hashem. Right? A slave is not just somebody who is responsible to do a couple of things. A slave's entire being is given over to the master, and the master has the ability to tell, not that the slave is working at all times, but a slave is responsible to be working at all times. Now, what happens between those two psukim? Between Pasuk Gimel and Pasuk Zayin, what happens between those two psukim? From 3 to 7, so verse 4, 5, and 6, what's happening over the course of those psukim? They built the pillars. What else?
They made carbonos.
Exactly. Vayizvachuz vachim shlamim l'Hashem parim. That they offered karbanos parim to Hashem. And shlamim to Hashem. What did we say about korban shlamim? What makes unique about korban shlamim? So korban shlamim is unique in that that is a korban that is shared between man and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That some of it is put on the mizbeach, but most of it is eaten by man, as opposed to a korban ola, which is entirely burnt. So with that, I'll take a look at something that the Sifsei Chaim says. Sifsei Chaim on Moedim, Chelek Aleph, page 320. So he discusses that non-Jews, yes, it's true that non-Jews have the ability to offer korbanos, but non-Jews can only offer a korban ola. They don't have the ability to offer a korban shlamim. In fact, he quotes the Gemara here, v'im neder shlamim makriven osan olos, that even if the non-Jew comes and says, I hereby want to give God a shlamim, he comes and walks into the base of Migdash, I want to give him a shlamim, he says, no. We give him an ola anyways. We make it, his offering is considered an ola anyways. Why? Ki kavana so haisa shetiyah l'shem ola. Because his kavana must have been that he really wanted to give an ola. Why? Because an akum mevin she'efsher lavuris Hashem rak ba'ofen she'esh ba'b'chisaron kes. Because a non-Jew sees their service to Hashem as something that they give up. They only perceive the mitzvahs that they do as, okay, this is my sacrifice, so to speak, to Hashem. Right? The idea that we use the English term sacrifices for our korbanos is not such a great term, because you're not necessarily sacrificing things. You are offering things, you're partaking things, you're sharing things. You're not really sacrifice. Sacrifice means that you're losing something and giving it to somebody else. Exactly. It's not a great translation. Sacrifice is not a very good translation of korban. Right? Korban means to draw close. Korban means to work to be together. So he points out here that the only ability the only one who has an ability to offer Yishlamim is Bnei Yisrael, who then becomes, because they're intertwined, they're connected to Hashem, as opposed to one who just dispenses of their responsibilities towards Hashem. So that's what takes place over these two psukim. At the beginning, they say, not everything Hashem says, we'll do. I mean, we'll do it. Yeah, we'll do it. We have these lists of things we need to do. I need to go to davening in the morning, to put on tefillin in the morning. I need to do a couple of mitzvahs and adam l'chaver. I need to do well in business. That's my things that I give to God. That's what nasa means. But nasa v'nishma is, no, my entire being is given over to Hashem. At every moment, I am completely intertwined with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that is perhaps symbolized by the bringing of the korban shlamim that takes place over the course of these psukim. Let's share one more thought that Rav heard from Rav Rudinsky recently. I think it was part of Parshas Yisro, not Parshas Mishpatim. But the whole idea of saying Nasim, the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu went to the other nations and offered it to them first. So how does this, we all know how the Medrash goes. It goes to the other nations, and the other nations, and Yishmael says, oh, what's in it? And Yishmael, and he says, well, it says that you can't kill. Okay, which one's which?
Steal.
They're the stealers. Okay. No offense. Edom is the killers, and I guess Esav is Edom, and somebody else is the adulterers.
Moab.
Moab is the adulterers? Very good, okay. So he goes to all three of them, and...
I did that in class before.
Oh, okay. Let the record show that it was just done in class before. So why is it? What was Hashem thinking? I mean, why? That doesn't sound very nice. To go to these people and telling them the one thing that they're going to have a lot of trouble doing, the one thing that they often do, that's what Hashem says, this is what the Torah is going to prohibit, right? That makes it seem like Hashem didn't want them to accept the Torah, right? So that doesn't sound like a very, sounds like the whole thing was rigged. It was all rigged. So what was going on over the course of the course of that matter? So Rudinsky explained the following idea. Very nice. What? Right. He explained the following idea, that what is the purpose of the Torah? I mean, that idea makes sense only if you think of it as Hashem's got this Torah, he's got to give it to somebody, and the idea is he should try to convince somebody to take it. So then he should highlight the parts of it that are very easy. Oh yeah, every time you come across a bird you want the baby egg, you need to send away the mother bird. Oh, okay, you can handle that. Right, but if you perceive the Torah as something that is necessary to change somebody, and the entire goal of the Torah is that people should be able to be changed from the Torah by learning it and by living it and by being it, Right, so then that's the recognition that B'nai Yisrael had. And that fits in with the idea of Nasa Minishma. The other nations, Hashem is coming to them and saying, well, what's in the Torah? They say, what's in the Torah is that you need to change. Well, we don't want to change. We don't want to change. But B'nai Yisrael, they were the ones that were willing to say, Nasa Minishma, we're going to do whatever it takes because we recognize that where we are now is not where we could be. And through learning the Torah, through doing the mitzvahs, and through living the Torah as being described, not just through the Nasa, but through the Nasa Minishma, that's the way that we're able to ultimately achieve perfection and able to achieve happiness, all the things that come along with Kvikas, along with a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, Adkan Perek Chaf Dalet. I guess we'll pick up with Perek Chaf Hei, Mir Seshem, on Friday.